It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You know, sleep. Like the thing you get when you go to sleep.
As familiar with it as I used to be.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think we're on speaking terms anymore.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. Starting to piss me off.
Hey, what do you think of my beard? Should I keep it?
Okay. I mean, I saw it when you first came on. I didn't say nothing. Because I didn't know if it was intentional.
Well, I grew it accidentally.
No, I mean, just like I couldn't be fucked to shave for 3 days. How long has you been growing this?
This is just a week.
All right. I historically, and I'm going to stick with this, think you look really good with a beard. What you've got right now looks like you just woke up from a bender. Like, you don't have a beard yet.
Okay.
And what you have doesn't look great. So if this is the end goal, I do not approve.
No, but it wouldn't be.
I remember. In fact, I remember you got quite an attractive beard and then punked out because of the itchiness before. And I told you, it's a wall and you get through it eventually. And it's not as much of a deal anymore. But I thought you looked quite good with the beard. I have regretted both the loss of the beard and the cutting of the hair that you did in the past. You looked good with both of those.
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, when Trish filled in for me for the podcast while I was recovering,
yeah,
I didn't shave that week. And I hadn't shaved since the day before my surgery. So there was a period of time there where the beard got pretty long before I shaved it. And I almost didn't. I thought, maybe I'll just let it grow out. So this today, maybe I won't shave, even though we're going to be on the podcast. I thought, well, I'll ask Tony what he thinks. I mean, you're right. It's just, for me, my beard doesn't grow very fast. And a week doesn't look very impressive. Granted. But I don't know.
But if you're asking how I feel about you growing a beard, I'm very much in favor.
Okay, well, because this last time I let it grow a long time and it got to that itchy phase, didn't bother me so much. I really seriously thought of leaving it. And I'm not sure why I didn't, I guess. But maybe I'll grow it out. I don't know.
I have heard that beards are itchier for those with weak hearts. So that must be it.
Well, anyway.
And I know, I mean, without going into it again, I know you had external pressures to cut your hair, and I respect that, and you got to do what you do. But the beard, you just punked out. So go for it again. Absolutely. I thought it looked great.
Yeah, well. But see, now, also, though, now there's gray in it when there wasn't before.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Do you remember it being red?
I do.
Okay.
I do, so, in fact.
I don't know if it comes out red very much now, but like all the red parts are gray now.
In general, you're a redhead. And yeah. I forget that, except when the beard and then when you grew the hair longer, because the hair is always hiding under the hat. And it's sort of an auburn redhead. So it's not like your eyebrows are like really popping or anything, but you're a redhead. Right.
And the hair on my arms, you know, if I'm out a lot in the summer,
I make a point never to look at your arms.
in saying, and I was born with red hair. So, and then it got blonde for some weird reason, like really blonde, like really like platinum blonde. And then it, and now it is what it is now, which I guess is, it's not really brown. It's kind of a gross dishwater color really. But if I get enough sun, it's red. And the, and my beard when I was younger, I think now a lot of the red is gray and a lot of the part of my beard that was brown is still brown. So I'm not sure a lot of the red is left.
I used to have that. I had some red that would show up in my beard when I was younger, and now it's basically all gray.
Yeah. So
no, I'm one of those people who has never, who has always been pleased with my gray hair, even from the beginning. When I started getting gray hairs, I was like, hey, it's the sign of maturity, you know, because grown-ups, all grown-ups, even grown-ups like in their 20s and stuff are often like, oh my God, I have a gray hair. What does that mean? So I'm like, this is a sign I'm growing up. And then when it really started kicking in, I was like, now I look all distinguished. It was a little weird. Every time I go get my hair cut, the way she styles it at the end, which, you know, no stylist ever does your hair the way you do it. So at the end of a haircut, your hair always looks weird, because they did it in a way that you don't do it or whatever. But the, however she does it, when I leave the stylist looking at myself, it looks like I just have gray hair. Like totally now. And I'm always like, oh my God, I went fully gray. And then the next time I do it myself, I'm like, no, there's still some brown in there. But yeah, I say go for it.
I don't know if I will or not. Later when we watch the podcast, I'll see what it looks like on the big television. I'll probably go, oh my gosh, I look terrible.
Well, okay. But I mean, yeah, no, as I specified, I'm very much in favor of it. It don't look super great now. I mean, but
you've got to go through that phase before you get to the other one.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Push through. Who you got to impress right now? Come on. Right now it's a little bit, a failed pilot in the 80s of like a recovering alcoholic detective.
Oh,
that like basically somebody was trying to do sort of a knockoff of Magnum, but grittier. Like that's kind of what you look like at the moment.
What if I was thinking of just doing a mustache? Would that be bad?
Every time I come to the decision that a mustache with no beard is just a non-starter, something in the world throws up an example to prove me wrong. I always said Tom Selleck's the only one in the world. And then I met a young fellow by the name of Nick Offerman, or more specifically, I guess, by the name of Ron Swanson. And that changed my whole deal. And then I moved on and I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't working up. Like those two guys are it done. And then I was introduced to a fellow by the name of Ted Lasso. And now I don't know anymore. The ability to pull off the mustache with no beard is rare. That's what I'll go with. And I do see for every Tom Selleck or Ted Lasso, I see 8,000. I need to call the police because I'm pretty sure they've been looking for this guy. So overall, the odds are never in favor of anyone doing just a mustache, but it happens. It works sometimes. But I will call the police on you if you're not one of those people. So
okay. It's good to know.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that regularly the hosts threaten to call the police on each other.
Yeah.
Although if there was a second host on the Joe Rogan Experience, we might not be the only one. Anyway, I'm Tony.
I'm William, and this is episode 555. Oh my gosh. We're only 111 episodes away.
Good to know where your head is. Good to know where your focus. That episode starts and you're like, this is the entire reason I did the podcast. And his head spins around.
Couple of years.
So, okay. Quick, how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical. Has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Email it. All y'all, email it, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And we will read the hat will forward the emails to us and we'll read them on the air. We'll talk about them. Do that. Go right now.
I have a book for you. Dropped off a book. What?
Okay. You said, I have a book for you.
I have a book for you.
I made it a face of shock. And then I swear to Christ, you farted.
That's my machine here.
Really?
Told you it makes those noises.
You said it makes noises. At no point did you tell me this machine farts. How can we be 1 week away from you getting rid of this? And I am just finding out you are hooked to a fart machine. This would have dominated my life for the last month.
Said last week, it makes rude noises. And you used the words fart machine in reference to it right after I said that because you knew what I meant. You don't remember saying that?
No, and I was not high last week.
It's on record. I said it made rude noises, and you made the joke that, I'm convinced now that this machine's just a joke, so that you'll walk around
that
with
was part of that.
Fart noise.
I do remember that the hospital is punking you.
Right.
A fart machine was part of it? Okay.
Exactly right. It's, even though I've had it switched out, or because the nurse comes and switches it out, and she says, the nurse that comes here, she says that ideally this machine doesn't make any noise. And that if it is making noise, it's because of some flaw in how the seal is or whatever. There's a flaw in the seal. So whenever she does it, turns the machine on and it makes noise, because one of the things it often sounds like is Mel Blanc doing a jalopy. Yeah, like that. It'll sound like that. But then after a while, it'll make that other noise. And what my nurse says is that's it sort of catching up with itself. Like it's ideally after it kind of putters like that, when it makes that more rude noise, that then it should be caught up and stop, but it doesn't. It'll make that noise. And now it's silent. But what's happening is.
But deadly.
Okay, now see the pressure in it is 150 when it's supposed to be 125. So
it's going to have to fart some of that off.
Basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
I've been there in my life where my pressure was 150 and it was supposed to be 125.
Well, see, the thing is,
after a big meal, you know,
every time we've podcasted, when I've had this, it's been making noise. You just haven't always heard it. So
That must have just been extra. That was no, it's perfect because I have a book for you. And I was like, and then it farted. So that's my favorite thing we've ever done on this podcast. All right. Who has a book for me? I mean,
Mick
gave you a book for me.
Right. Because he thought I would see you before he does.
All right. What is this book? True.
It's How to Make Cheese at Home.
Oh,
well, it's all about making cheese at home.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that then.
I was going to bring it up here and show it to you, but I forgot. But yes, mm-hmm. I am telling you about it so you can remember and help me remember to give it to you next time I see you. Mm-hmm. It's not a thick book. So the instructions are probably quite straightforward and easy. So you'll probably really enjoy that.
Sweet.
I mean, you're going to have to buy some things.
Oh, I'm out then. Never mind. Only two things that would prevent me from doing this. One, having to buy some things, and two, having to do some stuff.
Well, both
if you
of those
didn't
things,
have those, oh, crap. Yeah, no. Then
I mean, book. It would be a short book if it weren't for those things.
Fuck it, then. Fuck it. I'm not already too much. I mean, you know I can just go to the store and get cheese, right? I mean, what are you even talking about?
I was kind of surprised you brought up making cheese at home for those very reasons, but you did. now there's a book. So
the other thing I'm looking in is to roasting my own nuts at home.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But still in the shelves. That's what I want to do. And that's less common, but you can do it. And I was looking up and I think they do make machines for it, but I've also found a bunch of stuff. You just fucking do it in the oven. So
right.
Give that a shot. Cool. Cause I eat roasted peanuts in the shells regularly. And I'm like, sometimes they're roasted better than other times. And I love that roasting on it. So are we still on track? Next week, they finally admit to you this has all been a prank and you don't have to use it anymore.
It just, you didn't hear it this time. It just did it again.
I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. We need to mic it. It needs its own mic.
No.
It's the third co-host.
Well,
I'm
Tony,
and I'm William, and this is Fart Machine. I've been watching a lot of Bob's Burgers, so I really relate to this now. Like, this is adding a fart machine to your show is a thing.
Oh, well, yes. So last time the nurse was here, and she'll be here tomorrow too, she thought it looked okay, and Abby always comes out when she's here so she can see it, and she thought it looked okay. I'm still not convinced it's that next week is going to be enough. Because the problem with the whole thing is that it's kind of open. Split apart basically. And I haven't always looked at it because I'm afraid I'll be horrified, but I have sort of accidentally gotten glimpses every once in a while.
And you're worried it's going to talk, aren't you?
Grow teeth and
William, William.
Yeah. No, but last I knew, I mean, it's better than it was, but it's like, how in a week is this going to be what you completely healed? I just don't see it. So
you have to believe hard enough. If you don't clap your hands enough, it won't heal.
Well, for the first it's been, how long has it been? 4 weeks already, or three and a half? I don't know. But for the first week, it's like it didn't do a thing. So how could it be doing like a lot more now? I don't know.
Momentum is working extra hard now. If next week you still have to have it, I say we interview it.
It's just going to give you raspberries all the time. It's not going to say anything.
I'm willing to work with that.
Maybe it'll sound like a jalopy a little bit. But then it's raspberries. Raspberries and jalopies.
I'm very proud of that one. I can do that one really well.
It'll be pretty good at, but I don't know. I haven't done it for a while.
You got real big lips, which I do.
Yeah, I do too.
But the problem is I mostly make funny noises for the young people. And the young people have no idea what the hell that is. They're like, what's that? I'm like, it's an old timey car. They're like, no, it's not. When you, the car at my house, you push a button and then it's going and it goes, maybe. Well,
the genius thing is there's never been a car that sounded like that. But when Mel Blanc did it, it made sense. It's like, oh yeah, that's an old car.
I think back in the day, all the cars sounded like that.
You could hear an old car and Mel Blanc and go, yeah, I get where that's coming from. It's kind of like when Dana Carvey did George Bush. He didn't sound like George Bush, but you got it. You understood how the line was drawn between the actual George Bush and Dana Carvey. Same thing with Mel Blanc's old car sound. But that's the genius of both Dana Carvey and Mel Blanc is, even though they don't really sound like a thing, it's like, yeah, I get that. It's also the genius of caricatures, you know, when people at fairs draw these caricatures.
Oh, you know, it's the exact same issue as caricature, yeah.
Somehow it looks exactly like them, but not. It's crazy.
And it's what we do versus, like, if you listen to a real podcast, it's nothing like this, but, like, you can tell what we're going for. Like, you'd be like, yeah, that's a podcast, but you're like, it doesn't actually... Is this where the whole Apple Jacks don't taste like apples show up too? Is it like, are Apple Jacks a caricature of apple flavor? Is that,
or how there's
never had
how Apple there's Jacks. No, there's no pumpkin and pumpkin spice.
Well, that's just people being the Saturday Morning Breakfast here did a bit about that, because that particular spice combination is in a lot of things besides pumpkin desserts.
Yes.
And it would be funny. And one of them is it makes a really good pork rub. And so it'd be great if you walk in and say, can I have a pork spice latte, please? Well, and it would be the same thing.
If you look up the spice, it's typically in mulled wine, mincemeat pies, gingerbread. It's all and pumpkin pie. They're pretty much all the same.
Yeah. Cinnamon, clove, and nutmeg, basically, right?
Yeah, right. But maybe some anise and ginger, but nobody ever says those things. They just, like you said, it's always pumpkin. And a part of that's because that spice combination, when it was finally put into a product and marketed, that's just what they called it. I think the spice company that first did that was, what's the spice company that it's Mick something, MC?
McCormick.
Yeah, they're the ones that did it first. And since they marketed it as a pumpkin pie spice, and so that's what happened. If they'd marketed it as a gingerbread spice, that's probably what we'd call it. Or a mulled wine spice, that's probably what we'd call it.
Or pork roast.
Maybe that's what we'd call it. But no, they market it specifically as what you put in your pumpkin pie, and so that's what we call it from now on. That was back, when did they do that? I want to say the 30s, but it could have been more like the 50s or 60s. I don't know. McCormick, yep, that's who did it.
I've been spending a lot of time in the spice aisle lately now that I am in control of the cooking. There's a lot of spices I want that we may not have, or a lot of spices I want that we have, but it's 2 years old and it's in a plastic non-sealed container. And I'm like, we need a new bunch of this particular spice. So I spent a lot of time there, and I'm becoming very aware of the different brands and both their packaging quality and their price points. So McCormick is the middle, after Tones, which are the ones that are little plastic cylinders.
Yeah, I think that's an Iowa company
And then Spice Island is the good old plastic ones, or sorry, glass ones. And they're more expensive. So how was your Halloween?
Pretty uneventful, but that's fine. That's the way our Halloweens have mostly been. We try to have a big meal and stuff and celebrate it that way. But, everything was pretty low key. I didn't carve a jack-o'-lantern this year. We bought pumpkins, but I didn't carve because I think I'm not sure what I'm able to do. I'm still not able to pick up certain things to lift a certain amount of weight. And I'm not sure how much pressure is involved. Because when I carve a pumpkin, there seems to be a lot of pressure involved in cutting it open and scooping it out.
Yeah, that's just the unresolved rage issues you have.
I don't really know.
This is the fork to stabilize it.
So I didn't even carve it. We just bought them and had them out on the stoop. But yeah, I was pretty low key. What about you? I mean, did you have any, you said you weren't even going to have your light on this year.
No. And we haven't for a while, because our block is weird and we will get anywhere between 0 and 13 or so trick or treaters. So we always have too much candy. And then if we don't get any trick or treaters, then we have a bunch of candy left, which is not good for us. But this year, especially, I was not in favor of anyone trick-or-treating. We are still in the middle of a fucking global pandemic, people. So I didn't want to encourage any of that anyway. But we also move our Halloween activities. We moved to Saturday because Sunday, Trish goes to work the next day and she kind of has a routine the night before she goes back to work. And she's like, since it's just going to involve ordering food and watching scary movies, let's just do it on Saturday. So we did it on Saturday.
Right.
And we watched two scary movies. One of which was the second Hell House movie, which is not as good as the first one. And I knew that, but Trish was way less into it, which is why we watched it first. Cause the second thing we watched was the new Candyman.
How was it? Cause we haven't seen it yet.
Well, that's cause if you want to see it, not in the theater right now, you got to pay the early access fees. So we paid fucking $20 to rent that thing.
That seems a lot to me.
It seemed like a lot to us. This is the thing Amazon will do. Sometimes you can rent a movie while it's still in the theater, but you're going to pay $20 to $30 for it. And we went for it because we have no good financial sense. Trish's exact words were, I liked it quite a lot. I would agree. I have the one caveat that I think it was absolutely atrociously edited. And consequently, the pacing really took me out a lot because of that. But that one specific thing aside, it's great. And here's the thing. It's directed by Nia Costa. I don't want to take away from that. It is well directed. It is produced, partially written, and executive produced by Jordan Peele. It's Monkey Paw production, all that. And it feels like a Jordan Peele horror movie, which is a very high compliment coming from me. It's a spot-on horror film while also being a seamless social commentary metaphor. It's also a direct sequel to the first one, which I did not realize. I assumed it was sort of a reboot reimagining. No, it is a direct sequel from the first Candyman movie, which, as we talked about on here before, is good and was way ahead of its time. If you have not seen the original Candyman movie, see it. It's really pretty interesting. And we enjoyed it a lot. They did sequels because it was sort of a hit, and the sequels are weird. Everyone comes up with like a different origin story, and it's the first Candyman is about gentrification and class and race relations and issues. I don't believe the sequels are really about that. But this is a direct sequel to that, to the point that some actors from that movie play the same characters in this movie because it's, you know, that many years later. I will also say, though, if you haven't seen the first one, you absolutely don't need to understand this at all. They will bring up anything that matters related to the first one. But that was kind of neat. It was very cool. I was into that. Last night we watched... Oh, I remember. So you and I off the air talked about Halloween, the movie franchise. And in particular, how the original Halloween, not that great. It deserves a lot of credit because a lot of the stuff that is not that great about it is because that stuff has become huge cliches. And at the time that movie was made, it was not huge cliches, but it was also very low budget, and it's a slasher, and it's one of the first sort of slashers, and it's got a lot of issues. Recently, my sister saw it for the first time and was shocked at how bad it was. And she was confused because she was like, didn't John Carpenter also do The Fog around the same time? And I remember that movie being really good. And so she and her husband, a day or two later, watched The Fog again. And she's like, it is. It was the next year, and it's really good. And so she told me that. And so last night, we watched The Fog, John Carpenter's The Fog. This is one of those things. Don't get confused. There's been some remakes, and they're totally different, unrelated stories. They just involve fog. This is the first 1980 or 1979, depending on where you see the copyright, John Carpenter's The Fog. And it's good. It's also very much a thing of its time. And so, like, I'm not going to lie, Trish and I spent the whole movie still, like, cracking jokes about it. but like it's a pretty solid like ghost story, done pretty well, and it has Adrienne Barbeau and Hal Holbrook and Jamie Lee Curtis and Jamie Lee Curtis's mom Janet Leigh. And that's the funny thing to me. Everybody's like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis, scream queen. She was in Halloween and she just stunned everybody. And I'm like, no, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. Her performance in Halloween is not that great. Her performance in The Fog, if I had been like the right age, the right time, I would have developed such a crush on her from this movie.
It's one of the Fog movies, and I think that's the one that she likes. We should watch it because I'm not sure I've seen it. And it's not
me neither. I've seen later ones that are totally different stories and I don't particularly like
that's
them.
Just it, there's so many I can't remember specifically which one,
and most of the remakes are this fog happens and it becomes like a zombie outbreak story or whatever, like everybody gets trapped in one building and the fog is outside and you have to worry about that's not this at all. This one has many different locations and stuff. It's about a town. I'm sorry.
It's not based on a what's his name? Stephen King story, King, is it?
Not as far as I know.
Okay.
It doesn't have that vibe.
Okay. Well, there's one of these movies is Abby likes. It might be this one, but I don't remember. I'm sure she'll tell me.
Yeah. But so I would recommend people check that out. Also, I finished Ted Lasso. So, but I don't know if I can say that anymore because as of last night, I started it again with my wife this time. And it was a trip. You and I had to talk about it a lot afterward. And also, you were the one that gave me the first hint that everybody loves Ted Lasso. I have yet to hear anybody who has seen it who has not loved it. I might love it more than most people, though. I'm a little obsessed. And I remember because I was texting you right afterward and you had the good grace. I said, I finished it. And your first thing was like, oh, so are you okay? And I was like, he gets it. He understands. And I was okay. I was ecstatic. But I said, like, I've learned so much from this, so many like life lessons and stuff. And I expect to learn more when I rewatch it. You were like, yeah. And then like a minute later, you were like, so what life lessons? And that was the moment where I was like, maybe I'm a little in Ted Lasso compared to most other people. 'Cause I do get a ton out of it. And nothing has affected me as emotionally, which is weird because that's the thing. The stakes are never super high in this show. And the highest they get are things related to sports, which whatever. But the show made me care so much about every single character that even relatively low stakes, like I feel for them so hard. And I've cried so much during that show, good cries and bad cries. It's amazing. And it has hit that point to me where I'm like nervous now. Cause I'm like, this show cannot go on so long that it gets not as good.
Is it therapeutic, do you think?
I imagine it's going to be. I didn't have therapy this week. I will next week. There's a lot of stuff about it. In fact, that's the funny thing. The last time I talked to my therapist, I talked about Ted Lasso and how it was messing with my emotions. And she's like, I'm not caught up yet. Don't want to do any spoilers. And I'm pretty sure next week I'm going to have to be like, I think for professional reasons, you have to finish out Ted Lasso so we can talk. Yeah. 'Cause like, the character sympathy for me at least is so intense and all encompassing that it gives me so much perspective I can apply so much of what I see to people in my life, and it'll help me to deal with them, or to myself. That's the big one, of course. I relate to this person like this and that, and it deals with those things. Good. The comparisons with Good Place that you started are not amiss, because there's a similar concept, but the Good Place did it from a less emotional perspective, in that it was, the Good Place was about moral philosophy. The whole series was about moral philosophy, and it was about showing you moral philosophy and tricking you into learning moral philosophy. And it was very useful as just lessons. Like, oh, this is an ethical perspective that I agree with. I should apply it in my life thusly. This Ted Lasso seems to be a lot more about emotions and emotional honesty, both internally and with others. And that's a harder lesson to just have like steps for. But you see so many examples in the show that I can then be like, oh, that's like me and so-and-so, or that's like when, you know, when this happened, like, oh yeah, that I relate to that because I had a similar experience, or I had one where I felt that way. And I'm not going to say everybody in Ted Lasso makes the right decision, but you sort of understand the results of each decision and the ramifications there and the significance. And I don't know, the show has really been doing something to me where a lot of times in life, like, forget ethical arguments and forget, you know, moral arguments. I mean, I've always been saying forget moral arguments, but a lot of times, especially when it's something you're caught up emotionally in, when you've come to the right decision, you know it, you feel it inside. And a lot of times, if a decision you're like, then it's probably not the right one. There are exceptions, definitely, but there's a lot of stuff where it's like, here's what I'd like to do, here's what I wouldn't like to do, but that's not the same as what the right thing to do here is. And it's not necessarily the right thing for the others, necessarily. Sometimes it's the right thing for yourself. And of course, the difficulty is getting to that perspective. But there's a thing about, like, I have to do this and I hate it and it sucks, but I absolutely know it's right. Or as Roy Kent would say, fuck! That's the thing I just discovered now with Trish. I'm like, we need to get through this fast because there are a lot of jokes and references I want to make from this show to you, and I can't do that until we're caught up, because it's also a really clever and funny show, like, just straight up. I realized, because we've only watched the pilot now, there are several people in the pilot that show up later that I forgot were in the beginning.
Oh,
the biggest one being, so there's a bit where Roy is doing stuff on TV with some sportscasters.
Sure.
And he doesn't get along with that one guy. That's the original team coach. That, like, Rebecca Fire's in the pilot.
Oh.
I didn't realize at all. And then he walked in like 5 minutes into the pilot. And I'm like, that's that guy. And that was very interesting, because I also assumed, because basically all the sportscasters you ever see on the show are actually those sportscasters.
Yeah.
And I assumed he was one of those, because I know a few British ones, but not many. But that would explain it now, because he also doesn't come out looking great. And so I'm pretty sure that's because he's a fictional character who's not supposed to come out looking great. But, and just a couple of the stupid kid who wants the ussies all the time. He pops in and out of the series. He shows up in the pilot. And I was like, oh shit, he was here too. So that was fun. And yeah, Trish likes it. She's already making comments that I'm just like, oh my God, you don't even know what's going to happen. Like, certain feelings about certain characters and stuff. And I'm just like, I got to keep my mouth shut. Amazing show. Absolutely amazing show. Have I got anything else going on? No, it's not. Oh, yes, I do. I got my vaccine booster.
Yeah.
I'm now immortal, I think. I'm not sure how these work.
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I've heard their talk that they would have a booster, but I think the general conversation about boosters is that even the J&J people will just get like a Pfizer or something. As a
possibly
booster.
At this point, they definitely have determined that if you got Pfizer or Moderna, your third shot can be Pfizer or Moderna, even if it's not the one. And that's the thing. When I was marking the sheet, I'll have to look at my vax card. I don't know which one I got this time. I got Pfizer for the first two, but this one, the box to check is Pfizer/Moderna third shot. But I do think they have an answer to your question already, because I know I overheard it, Ivy. They have all of them there, and I think they have worked it out. So at such time, but I don't know that you have. Do you have a condition that would make you eligible at this point?
But he has said anything about that.
Yeah,
I should ask.
I think it's the same as before. And so for me, I'm like, you know, hypertension, diabetes, morbidly obese. And I'm going to say this to our listeners, because there's a lot of terrible people out there, but our listeners are not them. So I'm going to give you a little sneaky thing here. You go to the pharmacy or wherever, and you say, I'm here to get a booster, and they give you a form to fill out, and you fill it out, and how you verify that you are eligible is there's a question that says, are you eligible for a booster at this time by whatever US government guidelines, and you check yes or no. So I went in because I do have those conditions, which last I checked did make me eligible, but I also could have just fucking gone in and checked yes and they would have given me the shot, is what I'm saying.
The reason I bring it up is because the last time I talked to my cardiac therapist, which was yesterday, I guess, he asked me if I'd gotten a booster yet, and I remember thinking, well, you know, it sounded to me like he was just assuming that because I'm a cardiac patient, I would qualify. Mm. But I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure that just being a cardiac patient qualifies, because I don't have any cardiac conditions, right? So I don't know.
I'm sure the CDC page will spell it out. Also, in your case, though, because I know you were late to the game, you may not be due yet. It's supposed to be 6 months after the last one. And I only just recently hit that. So I suspect you may not be quite there yet.
We're vaccinated. I mean, it wasn't that much, but it was probably a month.
Yeah.
Easily a month, maybe two. So.
But I didn't even make an appointment. I went to Hy-Vee. I had to sit around for like 10 minutes. Then they gave me a shot. So. I think that's all for now. And we're running out of time. So let's do question thing. You want to take the first one, or should I take the first one? Because it'll probably be the only one.
You go ahead.
All right. This one is from Azurtown, and it is real, real bad for audio podcast. He writes, not really a question, just staring the biggest star I've ever met, and most personal, from September 13th. I want to read that again, because I don't want you guys to think I misread it. This is exactly what is written in the email. Not really a question, comma, just staring the biggest star I've ever met, and most personal, from September 13th. And of significance here is there is an image And for those of you on YouTube, there it is. There it is. I don't know who that is. Is that Mick Foley? Is that Mick Foley? It might be Mick Foley. I'm not sure. Sagittown, let us know who the hell that is. And why you can't type sentences. It might be Mick Foley. I honestly thought it was gonna be about an actual star, like in the sky, but no. Let us know who that is. Also, I'm not saying that this was intended just to be a personal missive to William and I suspect it was not, but I just want to remind people, if you just want to talk to me and or William, a lot of you have our email addresses, our personal ones. And if you do just want to talk to at least me, go to the blog, themagicthetalkinghat.com, and put in there, like, Tony, what's your email and how I can get a hold? And I can probably give it to you. I'm not going to put it out publicly. Not that crazy, but I probably can. So if you want to send us persons, don't send it to the hat. The hat is incredibly impersonal. The hat is very nosy. The hat is a lot of problem. Don't send personal communications to us, to the hat. It goes poorly. Agitalon, tell us who that was. I'm actually really hoping it's not Mick Foley and that it is in fact somebody who has no connection, like who it would be ridiculous to guess was Mick Foley. I think that would be extra funny. You're like, no, that was actually Barbara Streisand. What the fuck? Like, that would be great. But we'll see. I'm sure he'll get on it quick. He usually does. Meanwhile, all right, you take the next one. In your own time.
Hey, give me time. Wait, what? I opened the wrong one.
Well, we're recording, old man. Shut up.
Okay, this is from Mick.
Mick!
He says, this missive sealed with red wax is sent to both the hat wranglers. And it says, create a task for your co-host in the competitive style of the British TV show Taskmaster. You must list the rules for the task as well as a reason why your co-host would excel at the given task and why they would find the task challenging. You can find examples of such tasks by searching for Taskmaster on YouTube. Most entertaining task wins. You have one podcast episode to complete the task description as noted above. Your time starts now, the Taskmaster. You know, I was going to pull a prank on you about this because last time I was home, my sister told me that she watches Taskmaster and what's the other thing? Tell me the truth or lie to me or whatever. What is it? The one where someone...
Oh, Would I Lie to You?
Yeah, Would I Lie to You? She watches both of those things. And I joked with her. I said, the next podcast, I'm going to tell Tony all about these two great shows that my sister watches and recommended. And I started watching them. They were great. And pretend he's never talked about them.
Oh, you 100% should have done that. That would have been the best prank ever. My head would have absolutely popped off of my body.
Yeah, that's what I guessed. We joked about me doing it, and I did think about doing it, but I wasn't sure I could.
Oh,
I wasn't sure I could pull it off.
I mean that. Yeah. Oh God, I would have flown out of my chair. That would
actually
have been hilarious.
Actually, right after she talked to us about it, I don't think Abby watches now that the podcast is on YouTube. Abby will watch it now, but I don't think she heard you talk very much about those shows. So when my sister talked about them, she kind of got interested. So we did watch a few.
Yeah.
You know, they were actually pretty good.
It's fucking amazing. And seriously, the first at least 7, maybe 8 series of them are free on YouTube in this country. And pretty much everything else, except there's a current series, which I can't get a hold of. I saw the first 2 episodes quasi-legally, and now I can't get a hold of it anymore. But everything else is now on Amazon to purchase. So I have purchased the seasons that I didn't see. It's awesome.
One thing from the limited exposure I've had to Taskmaster, one thing that I decided as I watched it was I could never come up with these.
No. They're insane. But to be fair, it also builds on each other. Like, there are, because having now watched essentially all of them multiple times, there are tasks they do in earlier seasons that they're like, oh, and they learn from them for later seasons, and they build a task that's similar, but like they fill in loopholes or they change a thing or whatever. And occasionally they have a task that sucks. But they also have one of the guys from the first series is their task consultant. And apparently they try a lot of the tasks out on him first to see. And sometimes they do a task and it's like, I did not have a lot of entertainment value.
So the guy that's kind of billed as the sidekick, what's his name?
Yes. Alex Horn.
Okay. This is his concept, actually.
The entire thing is his.
Also, the theme music is composed by him because he's really a composer.
He is a stand-up comedian. He is also a musician who has his own band called The Horn Section, spelled H-O-R-N-E, like his name. But he was a stand-up for many years, and this came out of a thing he did 1 year, I think, when he couldn't get to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is where a lot of the comedians, that's the one time a year they see each other. And so he invented all of these tasks that the comedians had to do over the year. And then the next year at Edinburgh, they all like came together and compared results and stuff. And out of this was created a show, but he's not an impressive personality. Like, he's not a big boss man kind of thing. So they hired Greg Davies, who is another comedian who's also 6'8" and enormous, and who I'm also a fan of. And so the premise of the show is that Greg Davies has invented all of these tasks and used his enormous wealth to get all these people to do these things. And it is just Alex who does the admin and the operations of them. In reality, Alex has to come up with everything. And it's basically an open secret now, because on the show, they'll be like, you're the one who comes up with all of these. But then there'll be other bits where one time he was like, you know, I wanted to feel more involved, so I came up with, I invented my own task, and it's like a really shit task and stuff. And they have a brilliant relationship of basically, Greg loathes Alex. Alex completely worships Greg. And they also have a tremendous amount of semi-addressed sexual chemistry.
One of the ongoing gags that I really appreciate is when Greg will look at him and say, okay, well, do we do banter now? And all he can do is like praise him and compliment him.
They're a mess. And he also says horrible, like Alex is really good at creating the most awkward lines.
Yeah.
And like, cause I just watched one last night, and the prize task, which is always the first thing where they have to bring in prizes of a category and get ranked on who's the best. And the prize test was the most interesting, I think, thing beginning with G. And Alex said, and of course, for me, and he gestures to Greg, he's like, that would be your special spot. And he immediately said, I shouldn't have said that. And everybody was like, oh, what the hell? And then, but right on the heels of that, he responds with, so everybody will present their things and you will rate them. And the person or woman who has the best interesting thing begin. And one of the comedians was like, did you say person or woman? And what cracks me up is they all laughed and they started to go on. And then Trish, who was on her tablet and not paying attention, 10 seconds later turns to me and says, did Alex just say person or woman? And it's, yeah, he's a genius. And actually, if you go watch his stand-up, which he doesn't do as much anymore, that shit is genius as well. He has this whole bit he did one time where he pre-recorded stuff, but he perfectly lip-synced it. And he did all sorts of weird tricks where he would like talk to himself, or times where you wouldn't know, you couldn't tell if it was recording or if he was saying it out loud. And yeah, the horn section is a comedic musical group that is great. The show is amazing. And I love this question. Like, after all the, does it suck to hate Last Jedi, which, fuck off, I don't care. Like, this has redeemed you. You're now my favorite listener, because this is the best question ever. Unfortunately, we're out of time. No, it's not just, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to take this serious. I've unprecedented in the history of this show. I want to take a week and have us both think about it.
Not going to help. I can't come up with those
things. I don't care what you do. This is about me.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that.
I don't give a shit what your thing is. I need to craft the best task.
Right.
This is what I've been living for. I'm going to make a best task one for you.
Craft the best one for you, too. Tell it to me.
Oh, and then secret. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can write it in William. Like, I mean, I'm going to have to
up with something, but I doubt it.
Reiterate the statement several times in different phrasings.
Right, exactly.
To avoid any confusion.
Any misunderstanding. Yeah, no, that's right.
I can understand how this might be your version of hell, because the entire nature of the tasks in Taskmaster are, we set up specific rules so there is not an easy and obvious trick to get around everything, but the whole point is you are encouraged to find original, elaborate, and lateral thinking moves that do that. And so it's the great combination of you need to think carefully and be specific, but also you need to not, it needs to have the potential to go beyond you. And yeah, I don't know that you can, you,
well, sometimes they even clearly have an idea of the ways that a person,
yes,
like sometimes they even plant instructions or cheats in there that they hope they'll yes, discover. Sometimes
they're secret ones, or just little tricks. They had one about popping balloons, and it was how I could do it the fastest, but it was short balloons and long balloons, and it turned out the whole thing was Morse code. And if you translated it, it said pop only two and win. But nobody did. Things where you have to guess a certain thing and it turns out it's actually there somewhere. A lot of things that involve crafting stuff, and secretly somewhere there's the materials that would work well for it. And that kind of thing that has happened several times. Or just ones I love. There was recently a one of basically who could go the longest without blinking. And at the end, when they were reviewing the stuff, Alex is like, so, you know, Phil there, he blinked like 10 times before he started. Or no, sorry, he kept his eyes closed for 10 seconds before we started. If he had just kept them closed, there would have been no blink. And he could have lasted. And they're all like, oh my God. And he's like, legitimately, my 7-year-old came up with that solution. So yeah, there's lots of, there are times where it's a thing like that, and very common. It's a trick. It's something that sounds simple and it turns out it's a trick, but it's odd because obviously the premise of the show is to entertain and amuse. And you would think that would apply more to the comedians, that they know, like, I'm not here to win this show. I'm here to be funny and make people like me and want to, you know, see my material or whatever. But as it turns out, most comedians are ridiculously competitive and they get way into it and they get way pissed when they feel they've been cheated or there are team tasks and like when they feel somebody else screwed them over and stuff. And it's just hilarious. And Greg is really good at the whims of the moment. Like, he'll decide if something is cheating or not. And often it has nothing to do. He will make certain qualifications and he'll like, it's just my gut. I know it's horrible, but it's just my gut instinct to do this. Or he'll do some ruling and the audience will like rage against it. And he'll be like, all of your groaning just makes me more inclined to give him less points. But then there'll be other times where he's like, oh, the audience do love him and I want to be liked. I'm a comedian. We all desperately want to be liked. So then he'll change. It's so.
One of the things that impressed me the most was there was a task that required you to throw an object into some kind of a hole that was in the middle of this area that you couldn't step over a line. So you kind of had to toss it in, I guess. And someone did it in one. And a big deal was made out of it.
This
over
was
and
the
over
potato,
again.
The potato. Oh my God.
And they milked it and milked it and milked it and got everybody excited about it. And then kind of in a way that you didn't see coming showed that the person accidentally stepped over the line and it didn't count. And it was so perfect the way they presented it, the way they sort of manipulated the audience. It was like, wow, these guys are geniuses. They really know what they're doing.
And it's so the contestant in question, it's sad that based on that incredibly vague description, I know exactly what you're talking about. The contestant in question was a man named Joe Wilkinson, and he is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant comedian. And his whole persona is that he's kind of a gross, lazy idiot. And so, like, that is his whole deal, and he does it so well, as he's just like that creepy guy, you know, that's his whole thing. And he was just personally so like impressed or whatever, and he knew, because he's a comedic genius, he milked it so bad. As soon as it was done and it was like, oh, and when it finally settled down, he just looks at him, he's like, please don't take it away from me.
Yeah.
And he goes, and then he started crawling to him.
Yeah.
On his hands. It was amazing.
But the audience, like,
yeah, that's one of the most amazing. And that was only from series 2.
Yeah. When it happened, you know, the thing is, they probably knew in the show, they probably knew from the very beginning that they were going to take it from him, but they didn't let on. They let him get happy about it. They let the crowd get happy about it. They said, let's show this again. And they showed it again. And everyone was happy about it. And they said, let's show it a third time. And then the third time you saw him step over the line, it just crushed you. The audience was crushed. He was crushed. You watching were crushed. It's like, that's very clever. That was very clever. They're doing it like that.
But also sometimes it's a legitimate thing because they film so much footage from so many different cameras and things. There was one where the task involved building a thing while also you had to run back and forth to a place every 10 seconds and like introduce yourself as from a different country. And so they played one of these and you saw it, and almost immediately the contestant didn't make it back in time. But then they kept going, and you can see in the studio, the contestant is really confused. And so they stopped it shortly after. It turned out, at least according to Alex, nobody noticed at the time. And it was only in reviewing the footage later. And it went on forever. Apparently, they went through like 60 countries and built the structure like so high, and none of it mattered. It is the definition of clever, that show.
One time they had some tasks that they only had one person do, and they didn't realize
that happens every once in a while. They sneak those in.
Then that comedian's like, what? You only had me do that?
And of course,
not part of the competition.
They play to a lot of strengths of the comedians. And a lot of comedians will do that. Sometimes they're cheering each other on. Sometimes they're stabbing each other in the back. Some of them spend quite a legitimate amount of money out of their own pocket to aid themselves in certain tasks. One contestant, they actually totaled it up by the end, and he had spent several hundred pounds. And spoiler alert, he didn't win the series, but he spent several hundred pounds in the process. And the prize test is always amazing because UK law says on a show, if you offer something as a prize and somebody wins it, they own it. You have to give it to them because they had something in history where they would like pretend. And so that's a law. So people put shit up like their wedding rings or their car or a blank check. And the other people legit win those things.
I was going to mention how clever that whole thing is of them bringing in the prizes and then being rated. That's a genius idea.
And sometimes
the first task is that genius.
They find something really good. Sometimes they clearly go shopping for something. Sometimes they a few times they have something artisanally made to apply to the situation, or they handcraft. I've known people who've knitted their prizes and stuff. It's amazing. Watch the show is what we're saying. This is what we're here for. This is welcome to the Magical Talking Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is specifically designed to get you to watch Taskmaster. And I say this because there is a Taskmaster podcast, but that is purely retrospective and interviews with contestants. So I think it is more of a companion piece. This is just a commercial for that show. So here we are. And very important, there was a one season American version in which Alex Horn reprised his role. He came over here and did it. It sucked. Don't watch it. It sucked bad. It sucked real bad. And I could go on at length about the specifics of why. Because they had a lot of, everybody involved were great people. They got Reggie Watts to be the Taskmaster. Admittedly, weird casting choice, but I love Reggie Watts. They had some great contestants. It went very poorly, and there's a lot of reasons for it. But don't watch that one. Because it's bad. Shit. Okay. Next week, we got to talk about how we're watching Doom Patrol now because we're out of time, but we started watching Doom Patrol. Oh. Yeah. I have officially given up on Sweet Tooth. And so we picked a new show we were watching, and it's Doom Patrol. Okay. We finished the first season of Ghosts, and now we're doing Ted Lasso. So we're doing Ted Lasso and Doom Patrol at the moment. But let's talk about it next week. But next week, we come up with a task, and because you are such a silly baby person, if you have an idea and you want to run it by me, go ahead. You like email me or text or whatever, and we'll talk about it. I will help you because I've thought about these a lot because I have watched a lot of these. Okay. That being said, I think I'm going to suck at this. I think I'm going to be really bad at making one. But I have to try. This is what I was put on this earth for.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've discovered your purpose.
And unfortunately, if it comes out well, I think the next step is I have to murder Alex Horn to become him. So hopefully it won't go well because I like him. I don't want to have to do that. But, you know, they do have a home game. They also have a book that's just full of potential ones you can do, potential tasks. They got all sorts of shit. I've been meaning to buy some of that merch. But we'll see. All right. Everybody, stay tuned. Again, unprecedented. We're going to transfer a question over to next time. Because I want to give this what it deserves. Because it's the best question ever. You all could learn a lot from Mick in this very specific instance. Not Mick Foley. Mick, who listens. I don't think Mick the Knife is Mick Foley. But to be fair, I haven't seen the person I think Mick the Knife is since we started this podcast. So I guess I haven't actually confirmed it's not Mick Foley or Mick, comma, E the Mouse. Am I saying that right? I don't know. E the Mouse, comma, Mick. That's how that should be said. So we'll find out. But in the meantime, tune in next week for the thrilling conclusion to this question. And then otherwise, just will be a normal podcast. So have fun early November. Yeah.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.